New Thinking Aloud is a non-profit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.
Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hello and welcome. I'm Emmy Vadnais, co-host with Jeffrey Mishlove. Our topic today is about a doctor who will be sharing near-death experiences and spiritual stories. My guest is Jim Roach, who is a medical doctor who is double-boarded in integrative medicine through the American Board of Integrative Medicine and the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine. He hosts and has presented at International Integrative Holistic Health Conferences. He is a published researcher and author of Brilliance, The Pursuit of Hope, Wisdom, and the Divine, Vital Strategies in Cancer, Hope, Healing, and Happiness in the Face of Cancer, and God's House Calls, Finding God Through My Patients. If you enjoy this program, please like, subscribe, press the bell icon, and share. Jim is located in Midway, Kentucky, and today he'll be joining us from Florida. Now I'll switch over to the internet video. Welcome, Jim. It's a pleasure to have you back with me today on New Thinking Aloud.
Oh, it's such an honor, Emmy. I so much enjoy this.
The last time we spoke, we had a conversation about how you embraced holistic medicine and also expanded into spirituality. And I'll link to that interview in the upper right corner of the screen. Today, we're going to talk about your many near-death experience stories and some of the spiritually transformative experiences you've collected over the years from your patients and some of your close associates and friends. How did you begin gathering these stories?
Well, it was about 2010 when a patient first shared a near-death experience when they were in a car accident and out of body, and they felt mad about coming back because it had been so blissful. And then it concerned me that, you know, they didn't care whether they lived or died. And so that changed my perspective entirely. But I started using that experience as a way to ask other patients, you know, if you had any special experiences like that. And that opened up a whole new world because so many have had special experiences, but have not shared them with hardly anyone, maybe not even their spouse. And I was very honored that they would share those stories with me, but it was very transformative for me.
What was the experience that patient had back in 2002 that helped them not be afraid of death anymore?
That was the near death. There was a car accident and she was out of body, up above, looking down. And when she came back, she said, you know, I don't care if I live or die. And I thought, you know, here I've been, had 23 years of education. I've had, you know, 20 years of medical experience at that point, and just learning how to save people's lives, and you don't care whether you live or whether you die, right? And I thought, wow, how special, you know, because what if I didn't care whether I lived or died? And then what if I could tell my patients, you know, they didn't need to worry about being alive or being, excuse me, about death. But that thought was very preposterous to me at the time. And so I thought that would never be the case, but that's exactly what I do now.
Was it at that point that you began asking the question on your health intake form if people have had any near-death experiences or spiritually transformative experiences?
It was a few years after that, after I had acquired several more stories, because, you know, Colioso had shared his story. He'd had two near-death experiences, and that was particularly transformative to me, so I shared that on the last interview. But I have a list of maybe 10 different spiritual near-death questions on the intake form, and I look at that closely with my new patients, because that's the most exciting part about the new patient interview, is to ask those questions.
Can you give us an example of some of those questions you ask your patients?
So have you had a special experience? And have you had a near-death experience? I will also ask, per se, or if you have a transformative spiritual event like premonitions, intuitions, out-of-body experiences, voices, visions, dreams with meaning, seeing or sensing of spirits, right? Because those are the stories that flow in.
We'll get to the stories in just a minute. I'm curious, how do you address a person's health care from the perspective of being more informed about whether they have had some type of psychic or spiritual intuitive phenomena?
Well, it is informing, because the individuals that have had those stories, I find, have a different genetic background, have a genetic hormonal background than other individuals for the most part. So it tells me a wealth of other things, 25 or 30 other symptoms or attributes that they may have. I will know that they will be more of a detail person, cross the T's, dot the I's, workaholic type of personality, right? Always having more projects, maybe having difficulty sleeping at night, their head spinning with ideas, unless they've exercised until exhaustion during the day. I know that there are individuals that have a good on switch, but not a good off switch. And in fact, the ones with the really strong stories have probably been in fight or flight every single day their whole life and have not known what peacefulness feels like with that. So there are individuals with anxiety, panic, phobic, sleep disturbance, irritability, carbohydrate craving, swelling, breast soreness, tenderness, migraines, if they're female, bloating, brain fog, aches and pains in joint muscles would be characteristic as well. And these are individuals with more sensitivities as a rule of thumb, sensitivities to food, sensitivities to noise, to light, to electromagnetic fields, sensitivities to mold, and if they've had a deer tick bite, sensitivity to Lyme disease as well. There are individuals that tend to be particularly caring, giving, 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 don't always feel appreciated, associated with that. And individuals learn how generous they are and actually tend to take advantage of them. So I tell them, get in front of the mirror, practice saying no, set that boundary, because people will lean on you and will deplete you. And you need to take care of yourself. You're the goose that lays the golden eggs. So take care of yourself, and then you can be there to help others. These are individuals that are empaths. They get around negative energy. They do not do well around negative energy. They tend to absorb that negative energy. In females, they're the ones with female issues, with the premenstrual symptoms, with fibrocystic breasts, with ovarian cysts, endometriosis, those types of phenomena. And estrogen, and very, very few physicians recognize the full extent of this, estrogen promotes autoimmune access or autoimmune disorders. So these women, you know, will have, in addition to, say, irritable bowel syndrome and allergies, which are autoimmune related generally, also will be more prone to thyroiditis, to lupus, to rheumatoid and other autoimmune issues. The gallbladder disease is associated with that. So just from knowing, you know, that they've had these spiritual experiences, that they have these gifts, I have a sense about all the rest of that. Not only what I've shared, but it's tied in with lower testosterone in women. So they have lower libido. Testosterone gives courage, confidence, motivation. So those attributes are diminished as well. Testosterone dampens inflammation. It's anti-autoimmune. It lowers blood sugar. It lowers glucose. And it's anabolic, building and strengthening every organ and tissue in the body. So, yeah, from just that one or two things, I can tell all these other attributes that these individuals are more likely to have and to kind of look for and watch out for. And so I know how to manage that, because those are the individuals that end up coming in and see me, because they're burning the candle at both ends. Now, these are the women that get into chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia associated with these issues. And so I've learned how to address all of those from a health perspective.
Mm-hmm. And help them still be connected to their spiritual intuitive gifts at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's get into some of the stories. So where do you want to begin? Do you want to start with some that really have awed you, or what has inspired you with some of these stories?
Yeah, I will start with the most amazing description, classical description of heaven that I've ever heard. And it's a beautiful story of a beautiful woman. Her name was Beverly. She'd been a patient of mine. I'd known her for years and years. She married a man who I'd known since I was a boy. And she had health conditions, was always mostly bound to her home because of her health conditions. One Saturday morning, I got a phone call that she was in distress. Her husband had called her. I live in a small town of about 1,500. And so it was just 2 to 3 minutes to get across town to get to her house. And I went in. She was stretched out on the couch in clear distress. And you could, just looking at her eyes, she couldn't speak, but I could tell she was in severe distress. She was short of breath. And then I'll let her description take over from here. She was feeling chest pain at that time. Of course, along with that shortness of breath, she could tell that her breathing was getting slower and slower and more shallow as it was going on. And then when I arrived, I asked her, you know, how things were going. And then everything went black at that point. And when it went black, she saw the roof of her house lift off. And then she was up above. And from up above, she could see an ambulance coming to her house. There is a neighbor who was an EMT who called the ambulance. But then when he got to her house and into her room, he just went off into a corner and was praying for her. But when she was up above, she saw the ambulance coming through town over the railroad tracks, and she heard the ambulance driver talking to the other one, saying, well, there's this woman on Second Street who is having chest pain that we're having to go visit. She then saw the ambulance pull up in front of her house. She saw people gathering outside of the house, and then she saw me coming in. From that perspective. So it's kind of two perspectives, mine and then hers with that. Then she looked overhead because it had all gone dark. She looked overhead and saw a speck of light and said, I wonder what that is. And then instantly she was in heaven. She was at the pearly gate with Jesus. She couldn't see his face, but she saw his wrists and their nail holes, you know, where the wrists were, that kind of confirmed to her that, yes, this was Jesus. And the pearly gate was just as pearly as you could imagine, she reported, just a beautiful white sheen. And after they entered, she could see earth as like a tiny marble at the tip of a finger, a beautiful blue color in the distance. She saw her dead parents, her mother and father. She saw her dead grandmother and grandfather. She saw her predeceased 13-year-old nephew, Timmy, at that point. She was looking out and saw rolling hills and valleys and streams like it was in Kentucky. So looked very familiar to her. She'd asked to see Moses and Joseph, and in fact was allowed to see Moses and Joseph. Joseph, she described as 5'6", dark complexion. He had dark eyes, and he had a turban on his head. And of course, he had his multicolored coat on. And she said those colors just jumped out at you. They were so strongly colorful with that. So that was a wonderful experience. There were trees, there were flowers, there was grass. All of that was singing beautiful music associated with that. And She saw goats, sheep, and horses, so that reassured her that, yes, there are animal souls there in heaven. She was not able to get very far back into heaven, but she could see that far back. There are angels as numerous as grains of sand, and they were singing beautifully, powerfully. She could hear God's voice booming in the background, but she then was told by Jesus that they were praying for her, and that he had to answer their prayers, and that she would have to go back. So after he fully explained that to her, she agreed, but she was very upset about it and was crying, you know, when she landed back on her couch, awake at that point.
Yeah.
But Beverly, just an incredible soul. For example, when her daughter had a stroke, Beverly, when she came to see me, was not the least bit depressed about that at all. She trusted God that that was something that was supposed to happen and would be managed appropriately.
Wow. So her outlook and ability to cope in life had changed.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She saw demons at the foot of her bed. She would wake up in the middle of the night and be told to pray for certain soldiers because she'd had a brother who had been in the service and had gotten in the habit of praying at that time. So she was called upon by the higher powers to pray just out of the blue. She had a guardian angel that she reported that was as tall as the room, very muscular, very well built, and you didn't want to mess with that guardian angel, she reported.
Wow. So this was one of the early stories you gathered?
Yeah, this is one of the earlier stories. I will share another interesting story because this is from a different religious perspective. This is a gentleman, likewise, a beautiful soul. He grew up in Turkey, so obviously he wasn't Christian in his religious background growing up. But he was a prankster as a kid, and his cousin was asleep. And once she fell fast asleep, he went over and poked her real hard. And she was furious and chased him across the yard and finally reached him and was choking him, literally, and then threw him to the ground. And he was lifeless at that point. But at that point, he rose out of body. He was luminous. He was white. He could just turn his head slightly and see 360. And he felt the best that he had ever felt with that. Subsequently, he saw his aunt come out, and she was very upset, and he was close to his aunt. And he also saw how remorseful the cousin was. So it turned out the aunt twisted his rectum, and bingo, he was back in body. But this transformed him because, for example, there was a woman who was burning up in her car, and he went in at the risk of his life to save her from that burning car and did so successfully.
What do you mean by twisted his rectum?
So, you know, doctors do that type of strategy when we're trying to resuscitate a patient. I was not trained that way. I was trained to twist the nipple, right? And that would have a very provocative, stimulatory effect with that. But I guess twisting the rectum would have a similar stimulating effect.
Wow. And it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. I can believe that.
You also have a story of a woman who was in a car accident where it flipped, but she was unharmed.
Correct. Yeah, she ended up having a total of 3 near-death experiences, all of them, you know, spiritual near-death experiences. And this was her second spiritual near-death experience. She was an art teacher at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. And so she was driving home to be with her son for Mother's Day. And she was maybe 50 miles out. She drives slowly, very carefully. But there was a car in front of her that was going even more slowly, for like 40 miles an hour. So she finally felt like she needed to get around that. But then she ended up being crowded out and crowded into the medium. And yes, her car was flipped over two times. And then in the middle of the third flip, it's like time stopped. Well, it's not like time stopped. Time did stop for her in that situation. And she could see at that moment that she was going to die in that car wreck. And she could see her son crying, you know, on Mother's Day for his mother dying. So she was upset about that. And then at that point, she also had a life review. She had lived apparently a really good life because it was a positive life review. Everything good that had happened in her life from the very beginning. So that was very affirming. But as she reflected on dying on Mother's Day and seeing her son die, she said, "Well, God, I'm ready to die when you say it's the right time. However," she was spunky, "I'm not going to die on Mother's Day and have my son crying. That's not going to happen." And so it was like an angelic voice that responded and said, "Well, you need to then step on the brakes." And so she started pounding on the brakes, and the voice said, "No, like you had been taught," which was to push down and hold the brakes. So she did it in that manner. And then it flipped on over, landed upright in the grass. And there was not a speck of damage to the car. A trooper came along later and said, "That was a car accident that didn't happen." And just 20 minutes later, she was able to pull out onto the road and get on home to be with her son. So, yeah, very remarkable story.
Not only is that a truly miraculous story, this person also went on to have more experiences that some might consider unusual or certainly maybe not so common.
For sure. And she, for example, would wake up during the night and be visited from what she considered ETs or aliens that came in all different forms. She described or says that there are 19 different forms that have come to see her, some of them looking like robots, some of them as orbs, some of them, I think one of them may have had a reptilian type of appearance associated with that, but it was fascinating. She didn't think of this as being all that special. I don't understand that. She was very shy about sharing the details with and seemed surprised that everyone was fascinated by those experiences.
Right. You are a physician with a multi-decade career. How do you differentiate when somebody shares having these experiences as valid versus that there's something that maybe is going on with their own mental health?
Right. Well, these stories come from individuals who are very humble, who you would want as your best friend, very sweet people, very loving individuals, very caring individuals. So I think many of them were that way prior to these experiences, but these experiences either transformed them into those types of individuals or magnified those traits in those individuals. You know, certainly I've had patients who are schizophrenic, who are psychotic, completely different. And I do point out, you know, that if someone shares stories or, you know, if they hear voices that tell them to do something harmful or to do something negative, to check in with their psychiatrist and their local psychiatric institution for management. But when you get messages that are loving, caring, instructing their life in positive ways, then you definitely want to pay attention to those stories.
Can you share another story that really inspired you?
I'll share the story of Mike. Mike had ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, And I learned from Sue, a naturopath up in New Jersey, that ALS was, in many cases, end-stage Lyme disease. And that had been the case for her because she had been diagnosed with ALS, was on a lot of powerful drugs, was deteriorating. And then she found that after detoxing and then locating, after researching, she could find supplements that really helped her situation. And then she was able to reverse her ALS and keep those symptoms completely in check. But if she went 24 hours without those supplements, her ALS symptoms would come back. So I had Mike, who had had ALS for 4 months when Sue shared this information with me. So I was quite excited. I thought maybe I can cure Mike of his ALS potentially. And so we'll give it a go and see what happens. So I'd learned that Lyme was associated with three different types of organisms, intracellular, intercellular, and cystic forms, and you need to use a different antibiotic for all forms of that. So I put him on a powerful intravenous antibiotic and then two strong oral antibiotics. And with each antibiotic that I added in, he would see improvement for about 3 days, but then would start to relapse. And then he was stable for about a month, and then things started deteriorating fairly rapidly at that point. And I was telling a story to Sue, and she said, yes, he crashed, didn't he? because that's the approach he's learned not to use in these patients. And I said, yes, he did. He ended up in the hospital. You know, he had been losing weight at that point. His ribs were starting to show. He was breathing more shallowly, and he developed a pneumonia. When they got in the hospital, he was having so much trouble breathing that they had to do a tracheostomy and put him on a ventilator with that. And so when on the ventilator, he went into a coma and was out of body. Then he was in a special place with Charlie near waterfalls. Charlie was on horseback. And finally, after being with Charlie for an extended period of time, he was in a coma for a week. Charlie said, well, you've got 2 to 3 more souls to save, so you need to go back and save those souls. So he did come out of his coma and actually recovered rather rapidly. You might expect him to take another month to recover, but just within 2 weeks, he was out of the hospital. And he continued to improve after that. After several months, he was able to walk about 15 feet for the first time in a year. His ALS doctors were just amazed at his progress. They said, we don't know what you're doing. Of course, we had him on supplements. Also had him on double dose testosterone to really build up his musculature as much as we could. But for the next 2 years, he was out saving souls. His family was so excited, really, because he had been a farmer and he was always out and about, and he was never at home. He was always out visiting with other farmers. But with his ALS, he was forced to stay at home with them. And so he would share all of his stories, and they got the blessings of his presence at that time. But he saved many more than 2 or 3 souls. But after 2 years, did finally get to move on to the other side.
How did he save souls?
As a witness, as a testimony. I'm sure telling a story about Charlie was one of the ways that he saved souls, and how he was able to come back from such a severe coma. You know, pneumonia and ALS is a death sentence, right? You can hardly breathe, and then you get pneumonia on top of that. How do you survive that? And that was the only reason he survived, was that there was more work that he had to do on this earth.
What a sweet message. You have more souls to save.
And I think that's true for a lot of us while we're still here as well. More work in that regard.
And maybe sometimes we don't know whose soul we're saving or assisting.
Absolutely. Because sometimes it's just the tiniest gesture that can make all the difference in some individual's lives. Just a smile or just being noticed being cared about for people who are in desperate straits. We just don't realize their circumstances.
Absolutely. You also have a really significant story of your own brother.
Yeah.
And a nurse.
Tom had the lowest blood count that I'd seen at that point. He's 4 years older than me. He kind of picked on me growing up. But he did invite me into his rock and roll band. So I got to play keyboard when I was in eighth grade. And he was a senior on bass guitar. The Band of Angels, we were called. And he was on the tennis team. I always admired him. You know, we went to Duke University. I was 4 years behind. I joined his fraternity. He was a freshman cheerleader. I became a freshman cheerleader and so forth. So I always admired him. But when he developed low back pain, he took a lot of ibuprofen for that. And he developed a severe stomach ulcer with that. And his hemoglobin dropped to 4. Now, that's one-third of the tank. And I had never seen that. I didn't know that that was compatible with life. Yeah, so he was rushed to the hospital. And they did rather severe surgery with him. Not only did they remove part of the stomach, but they did what's called a vagotomy, where they clipped the vagus nerve. Now, they don't do that anymore. And they really weren't doing that then. And it wasn't a good idea that they had done that at that point. Because the vagus nerve is the whole parasympathetic nervous system for the digestive tract. It's responsible for stimulating peristalsis, for moving intestinal contents on through, for stimulating acid production in the stomach, digestive enzymes, helping the bile to be released from the gallbladder. So without the vagus nerve operating, the food just sits in your stomach and intestinal tract for a long time. And so, you know, his food would come out the other end, you know, largely undigested. He had the worst blood work of anyone I'd ever seen. He required recurrent transfusions because he couldn't absorb iron at all. So he must have gotten transfusions, I don't know, 12, 15 different times at least. And so he would recurrently show up at the emergency room at our local hospital, the one that I'd helped save at one point. And the nurses all there had gotten quite familiar with him and loved him with that. But his situation had gotten so dire. He had developed, you know, some incontinence associated with that, and that was creating a lot of family stress. Finally, one time he got so anemic, but refused to go to the hospital because he didn't want to embarrass his family with his incontinence and other issues. But he finally relented and did go to the hospital. And he was evaluated in room 1 for his condition. The triage nurse, I think, initially evaluated him, went on to the triage room. And when she walked into the triage room, or while she was in there, there's a bowl of apples on a table. And inexplicably, that bowl of apples just fell to the ground, right? And then she felt the presence of my brother, and then she felt a hand on her shoulder, which she recognized was Tom's. But immediately she was freaking out and said, "Is Tom alive? Did he die?" And she went into room 1. And in fact, Tom had died at that point. But I had not heard of that story until several years later, when the supervising nurse who was there that day shared that story with me. And I so appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry for the loss of your brother. And it really shows what a strong mark it makes on somebody's mind and heart that this nurse was able to recount this story to you years later.
Oh, yeah. 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 She wasn't immediately involved, this particular nurse, but, you know, all the nurses there were very close and they all knew Tom well. And so, you know, very meaningful to share that. Yeah, and you know, this is my hospital that I'd grown up in, that, you know, I'd visited with my father making calls, that I'd been orderly there. I delivered 100 babies there. So everything about that hospital was special to me.
Even more striking that the supervising nurse recalled this story when it wasn't even their own experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all the nurses I know were impressed by that event.
Yeah.
There's another story I'm compelled to share with you. It's not a typical near-death story, but as you know, I've had COVID over the last week. Now, I shouldn't get COVID, right? I'm maybe the top botanical medicine expert among physicians in the country at this point. But when you go a day without sleep, it doesn't matter how many supplements you take, your immune system will be suppressed and you can get COVID in those situations. So I've been recovering from that. I woke up even this morning not feeling that great, having not slept well. But then I had the idea of, because I always am down in my winter spot in the Florida Keys at the moment, and I've always swam in the pool where I'm located. So I said, I really need to get back moving, circulating. And so I went out to the pool and I swam one lap, and I was short of breath from that and thought, well, should I stop? And I said, no, I really need to go. I really need to get that circulation going, those lymphatics going. And so I did a second lap, and actually it was less short of breath, and then did my full 10 laps of the pool that I always do, and felt so much better doing so. But it reminded me of a story of a very special patient I have called Dana Huntsman. And Dana has would give me permission to share the story. It was in one of my books as well. Dana was a lay minister, and he had special experiences associated with the divine, a special divine connection. But he developed chronic pancreatitis and had been in the hospital once for a year with his chronic pancreatitis. And if that wasn't bad enough, he was later in the hospital for a year and a half again with chronic pancreatitis, to the point where he was so weak that all he could do was move his eyelids. That's all that he had the strength to do, was move his eyelids. But then he gained, at that point, he was praying. He continued faithfully praying to Jesus and to God. And then one point when he was praying passionately, God told him, walk like you are well. Walk like you are well. So Dana was able to get to the edge of the bed, and with assistance, he tried to take one step, and he kind of collapsed to the floor. But then later on, he tried again, was able to take a step, and then later two, and then three steps, and then was able to walk further and further. And just within a matter of several weeks, he was strong enough to get out of the hospital. And ever since, he's been taking long walks every single day. But I like that. And that was helpful for me this morning, for me to swim like I was well. All right. So often people think that if I just rest enough, then I will get healthy and get well, right? Well, sometimes you have to reach out and grab instead of just waiting and resting. You need to take action and get into motion with that. Again, circulation, lymphatic flow is very important. So I consider it a different type of near-death experience. But then, and the thing that impressed me the most about this, though, was that after these experiences, he said, Jim, I wouldn't change a thing. This is, that taught me very meaningful lessons. I had very meaningful experiences in the hospital with that, and I would not change a thing. How amazing. And that reminded me of another patient that I've had who had came to me in 2017 with stage 4 HER2-new breast cancer. And under my care, she did really well with all of her chemotherapies. She ended up having a total of 12 chemotherapies. And then she finally deceased, or transitioned, excuse me, earlier this year. She had had severe neuropathy, but then received intravenous ketamine, had spiritual experiences tied in with that. In fact, she asked God lots of really interesting questions while she was under the intravenous ketamine. But then likewise, despite for having long periods of pain, you know, 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 with a neuropathy, she would say also, Jim, you know, I would not change anything. I've learned such important life lessons with that. And I mean, I suspect that's going to be true for all of us at the end of our lives when we look back. You know, because that's really the proper way to think about this, is that everything is just a lesson. And we're never given a lesson too big for us to hurdle through, to jump over. And we can gain so much. The bigger the lesson, the more wisdom we acquire in that process.
Well, that's a very hopeful and inspiring message, especially from you, who has helped so many people. And that was, you're kind of reading my mind a little bit, because I was going to ask you, why do you think some of these people have these experiences and others don't? And perhaps it's related to that each of us has, we receive what we maybe need or will help us in the process. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm still working on that riddle. Because now we know, for example, with children who have cardiac arrests, that 80% of children have spiritual near-death experiences, right? So very common in children, where only maybe at most 20% of adults will have spiritual near-death experiences associated with that. So I'm still not sure exactly why. Another point, though, relevant to that is, you know, children who are born with congenital issues or children with autism. I think God cares particularly about children and gifts them when they're given those types of challenges. And I hear stories over and over again that kind of reflect that. So I always point that out to the parents of an autistic child and say, you know, your child is very gifted. They've been given something special here. And they'll almost always nod their head yes. They've picked up on those special gifts. Not only are they gifted intellectually, but they're gifted spiritually. They're particularly tuned in terms of being caring in their own way. And I was telling one, I think he was a 12-year-old autistic kid, that he was gifted. And he says, it's like a chess match. You know, I can see ahead 8 moves. Chessboard with that, right? So he's gifted in being able to see precognitively what's going to develop with issues.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, and I just also want to share that I think you and I both, being practitioners in the healing arts, that we really want to and have alleviated and want to alleviate a lot of suffering. And so even though people go through challenges, I don't want anyone to think that I'm suggesting that people need to or have to go through suffering, that maybe there are ways to remedy that. But as far as these topics around near-death experiences and spiritually transformative experiences, what do you feel are the kind of common features that people share with you that you've sort of maybe perhaps categorized, or do you not look at it that way?
They're familiar ones in terms of what I've read about, but yeah, they go out of body. They will often mention experiencing the light. I don't hear the tunnel reference mentioned much at all, but they all seem to be in at least a very peaceful, but usually a very blissful sort of state. And they often are visited by predeceased ancestors at that time. And their visual experiences will be compatible with their own spiritual beliefs. So, you know, it's not like heaven is a set place of a physical place of any sort, because energy can transform into any thing that we can imagine. So really, the type of spiritual near-death experience is one that's compatible with our religious beliefs, a situation that's very comfortable for us, very soothing for us at those times. So I think I've had some that have been, one who was given a tour of hell, so to speak, was put in a bubble with an angel and got a tour of hell. another went over the quote unquote valley of deaths, where they could look down and see bones sticking out of the soil down below associated with that. And I've had a couple of patients that have had negative near-death experiences. Now, one was an alcoholic, and he didn't share the details of his experience, but it clearly shook him up because he stopped drinking immediately. And two kids that he had abandoned, he set up trust funds for.
Good for him.
Yeah, right. He did everything he could over the next 2 years to kind of make amends. Then he had a second spiritual near-death experience, this time in the ICU with pulmonary issues. And this time it was blissful. There's a physician in New York, Sam Parnia, MD, who's a resuscitation specialist. And he says, you know, do not attempt suicide, because he, in his emergency room experience, has seen a lot of individuals who attempted suicide, and they had horrific near-death experiences associated with that. So that's a good book to consider reading. In fact, one of my mentors, Dr. Dwight McKee, contacted Dr. Parnia, and they were going to plan a program to try to induce a near-death state in individuals with stage 4 cancer so that they could be reassured before they had died. That was prior to the research of Roland Griffith that Johns Hopkins in New York with Johns Hopkins with psilocybin. In fact, I had one of my stage 4 cancer patients get the psilocybin through that program, and she sent me an email and really thanked me tremendously for that. So that's wonderful work that they're doing there.
Jim, are there any other stories you want to share today?
Those are the primary stories. I'll just briefly mention that I have a good friend, patient, his name is Mike, and he had his near-death experience in the back of an ambulance on the way to the hospital, had a heart attack and went out of body and experienced a blissful state. And it really transformed him. I mean, he's a big, rugged farmer type of individual. But now when he sees me, you know, he gives me a big hug, right? When he greets me, he always has the most pleasant demeanor, just the opposite of what you would expect from a big football jock looking type of individual. With that, and he had a funny story, because his mother-in-law, his predeceased mother-in-law, hangs out in his house with him and his wife, and I don't think she's particularly happy about him hanging around. And at one point, she told him, "Take off that funky hat that you have on; it looks ridiculous." So he puts up with his predeceased mother-in-law, a very kind, gentle soul.
There's a message that many people have reported to you that they share about the timing of death that I'm wondering if you're willing to share with everybody.
Of course, so many of my patients with their spiritual near-death experiences, I do hear time and again, you know, it's not your time. It's not your time. And then you come back. So I've heard that once. I've heard that, you know, 24 times associated with that. And so, yeah, I do feel like, you know, that there is a time. We do have an expiration date on our physical bodies for sure. But I've heard through an intuitive that there are exit points or portals where we're able to exit our lives. And I was told that I've had 4 portals that I've have passed by that I could have exited and didn't, and that I have 4 other times before my expiration date on my physical body occurs that I will be given the opportunity to exit. So I thought that was interesting perspective to hear about.
Yeah. How have these patient stories of near-death experiences, spiritually transformative experiences, transformed your life?
Well, the very obvious thing is, you know, in medical school, they try to beat out of you anything you can't see, hear, you know, touch, smell. if you can't pick up on it from those obvious senses, then it must not be real and the patient must be making it up, right? And you're the expert. You're being taught by the brightest minds in the medical field, right? And so as their students, then you know that everyone else who's sharing anything with you that's not associated with the senses, that they're hypochondriac, that, you know, they're, whatever they're describing is not real, that they're, you know, somatic symptoms, so to speak, with that. But I've learned just the opposite over my 42 years that, you know, when a patient shares that they're having an issue or having an experience, I learned that that's almost always real and rarely it's hypochondria per se. You know, really it's what I was describing earlier, right? The types of individuals that have these experiences, you can see how they get labeled as hypochondriacs because that's exactly the image of what a hypochondriac is. With regards to that, but so in medical school, I wanted to believe in God, but how is God possible scientifically, right? It's simply not possible. I knew I was supposed to do good things my whole life, but it didn't seem that, that God could truly, you know, how could that fit in? But once I started hearing these stories and you hear them again and again and again, and remember, I've, at this point, I've had 100 patients and other individuals with spiritual near-death experiences, 900 with transformative spiritual events. And it becomes very obvious that, and from those stories, that God is very real, that quantum physics is very real. And so for a number of years now, well, for at least 10 years now, I've been 100.00% certain about God being present. And that's, you know, a paradigm shift, right? When you don't have to worry about dying, then that lifts so much off your shoulders. What would you worry about if you don't have to worry about dying? What else is important enough to worry about? And the bottom line is, of course, there's nothing we need to ever worry about. All we need to do is just do the best we can and move forward step by step and trust the process and realize that process is going to lead us to higher and higher levels of understanding and to a situation where we can offer unconditional love to ourselves and to others 24/7 and can be in a state of continuous gratitude 24/7. That's the ultimate lesson. And that's what we're here to learn. Once we can get to that point, then we will instantly graduate because that's what the life lesson is about. Unconditional love, continuous gratitude and appreciation.
Jim, thank you so much for sharing these stories and the wisdom that you've carried from your patients, with your patients. It really also shows how much these experiences demonstrate that there is more meaning and purpose to all of our lives than maybe we sometimes recognize.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Even the little things, you know, just the little words of kindness, just the smiles, everything. You may not have a lot of power to accomplish great things, but remember, you know, and this is biblical, right? That you can move mountains or you can clang bells and so forth, but if you have not love, you've accomplished nothing, right? The key is the love. It's not the act. It's not the doing. It's the love that you can, anyone, any of us have always have that power of giving love.
Thank you for your love. Thank you for making me smile. And I would gather many viewers and listeners as well. Thank you so much for being with me today, Dr. Jim Roach.
Oh, it's so much my pleasure. I hope you the best future. You're such a blessing to Jeffrey and to all the individuals that you interview and to New Thinking Aloud. They're so blessed to have you on board. So I pick up on that as much as anyone, I think.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. And for those of you listening or watching, thank you for being with us. You are the reason that we are here.
Thank you.
I imagine that by now, many of you already realize that, in conjunction with White Crow Books, we've just launched the new Thinking Aloud Dialogues book imprint, and our first title is There Life After Death?